Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hamid, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance.
Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
الحمد لله رب العالمين أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله أشهد أن محمد نبي ورسول. Listening audience this evening and all my friends and brothers and sisters of Assalamu Alaikum, which means may peace be to you. We have other brothers and sisters who are listening who may be of a different faith. They understand that when we peace be unto you, and the other term, Assalamu Alaikum, we are praying that Allah gives us the best peace amongst ourselves and the time we're with each other and in our lives. I welcome you here to inheriting the power of mental freedom. You might, in terms of mental freedom, we just would like to give you an idea about what that really is saying, and we do the best we can to give you some insight and promote some facts, figures, and interesting evidence of what we are talking about relevant to mental freedom. You must have a mental freedom. You must have it. It's a must for a society or individuals to perform as well as they have been created to perform. Without mental freedom, it's impossible for us to perform as well and live up to our true potential or our ability. You don't have mental freedom. If you don't, it's because the control your mind, the control of your mind, the control of your thinking, the control of your ideas is generally done by the culture that we're living in. And if we understand the language of that culture and what that culture is giving us in symbolic language and signs and symbols and words and from music to literature, we don't understand the impact that has on our subconscious mind, then we are not in a position to exercise our conscious mind with a degree of freedom, with the freedom of mind, that we need to project and we need to build. This is very, very important that we begin to look at the whole concept. During our talk this evening, you will be able to see what we are getting to in terms of this idea of mental freedom, especially for the African American people. We have to be very specific in that because most our people, the African-American people, are not free. So when we speak about things that benefit us, they don't think we are talking about the world. They don't think we're talking about the other conscious people because this society, this culture has conditioned us to not to believe in ourselves, conditioned us not to live and develop our own thinking, our own way of life. This culture made us think that we needed them for everything. Your knowledge and position, permission. Ironically, most people think that they are in control of their thoughts, but they are not. Tonight's subject is going to deal with the issue we talk about often. We don't hear about it enough in the society, but it's a very, very crucial issue for the African-American people and the world, too, African-American people specifically. The subject tonight, a talk concerns the fact that of the United Nations Population Division, they cite an urgent message. The sub-replacement fertility birth rate is 2.1. 2.1. Now, for those of us who have some knowledge of what that means, sub-replacement fertility rate, and how that is relevant to us as people and as African-American people, we're going to discuss that in a few moments. This opens somewhat of a Pandora box because some of us are looking at the possibility relevant to this evidence and these facts. The African American people can be becoming extinct. That's serious. Serious, serious business. I am Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African Balalian American Griot. I have over 17 years of formal education with a bachelor's degree in sociology from Kane University. I have a background in speaking and writing over 30 years about the African American culture that addresses this issue that we are talking about. I have many hours I've put in to what we call a independent study as it gains knowledge and understanding about the formation of the African American community, prosperity and perseverance. this is what I do as a griot. As a griot, I've studied all the things that are relevant to the African-American people and how it affects us today. Now, I know many of us, and on this particular line, we have many of us who've spent time in what we call the Nation of Islam, what we call the development of the African-American community in terms of religious consciousness. And the reason I'm using that term religious consciousness is that we all can be part of religions, and many of us are part of different religions, but we may not be religious conscious, meaning that we may not be conscious enough to realize what this actually means, to give you an idea about this consciousness. And what's so important about consciousness is that we have to deal with the reality. And many times we have been taught and trained by those who lead the world in terms of religious aspect. We've been trained to think in a mystic way, a mysterious way about religion. Briefly,
anyone on the line? Yeah, it's a very bad connection, sir.
Is this Imam Abdullah?
I'm sorry?
Is this Imam Shahid Abdullah?
No, this is the guest, Father Abu Muhammad.
Okay. But I have tried to reach Imam Abdullah to let him know that he has lost audio.
Yeah, I just spoke to him on the other line. So let me go back to him and let him know because the audio is gone.
Okay. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Don't hang up, though, bro. Assalamu alaikum.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Yes. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I'm not hearing anything.
You're not hearing anything?
No.
Well, I hear you talking.
That's not me that's talking.
Huh?
I'm talking to you now on your phone, on your line.
Okay. On my phone, let me see. I turn it on. Okay.
Are you there? I can hear folks in the background. Can you hear me, anybody? Wow, serious sabotage. Anyone hear me? Can anyone hear me? I'm hearing somebody talking, but it's very, 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 very faint.
Assalamu alaikum. We've been having some trouble. Can you hear me on the line now? If you can hear me, I'm going to do something here.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum. God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. We had some technical issue here. So therefore, I'm not certain that you're hearing me. If those of you who are on the phone now, I see a 347, and would you push the 1 on your phone so I can see that you're hearing me? If you just push the 1 on your phone, that'll tell me whether or not you're hearing me now. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. We'll continue on with our show this day. Patience with us today. We run into certain problems on the Blog Talk program lately. What we are doing now is dealing with the technical issues. Those of you who missed the introduction, my introduction, of course, I'm Imam Shahid Abdullah, the African-American Balani Griot, and I greet you first with God's name, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, Alhamdulillah, Rabbi Alameen, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammadan nabiyyu wa rasulun. Greet you in the greetings of peace of assalamu alaikum. And though this is inheriting the power of mental freedom, and we're dealing with some technical issues here at Blog Talk for the last several weeks, and we're working with those situations, and now we've figured out here how we can do this program now. I don't know whether or not it's going to continue down the line, but right now we have this working in this fashion. Our discussion tonight was the subject was about the concerns that and facts that the United Nations Population Division has cited, that urgent message that the sub-replacement fertility rate is 2.1. And this opens a sort of a Pandora box, because those of us who don't know what the sub-replacement fertility rate is or what it means to us, it means a great deal to the African-American people. And it means a great deal to the world. But the problem with us as African-American people, we are in the process of not being able to recover. By that I mean that the sub-replacement fertility rate is a rate of birth that has been going on since man has been on the planet. It's nothing new. And simply what that means is that whatever group or nation or culture exists, there is a rate of birth that has to take place in order for them to continue and not become extinct in several generations. And that is 2.1. And it's all over the world. In fact, China has started to reverse its policies because they felt as though they have to get their sub-replacement fertility rate in order to keep a younger generation coming in, the birth rate. And what it really says, not just for China, but for the world, that every female of any culture has to average, it has to be an average of the females in that culture or nation, that they have to bear 2.1 child during their lifetime, and those children have to reach age 15. With that, is that kind of natural growth and development will cause that population or that group to continue on through time, because that's is based on time, and they won't become extinct unless something catastrophic will happen, like a tsunami or something of that nature. But under normal process, that will continue. That will continue to cause that civilization or culture to grow. Now, as I was saying, other nations are recognizing this, that they made some mistakes over the years, and they tried to cut down on the birth rates during the Mao Zedong's time in China, and of course we know it happened in Japan and the war and so forth and so on. All these nations are beginning to realize that they're not having children fast enough to replace the ones that are dying off, to replace the people who are dying from either disease or natural death or accidents or so forth. It can be a very devastating mathematical process. It's about mathematics. And the mathematics is that one has to replace the other. The female has to have a child to replace herself, and she has to have a child to replace her mate. And that averages out for that group 2.1. Now, Japan is having another issue, which deals with the same fact. Japan, they're not replacing their older generation. In other words, their people are living older, but because they're below the sub-replacement fertility rate, and as you know, at one time Japan stopped having children because they was trying to get more out of the people who was alive at that time, and so did China. But both of them now are finding that they have to begin to encourage their society, encourage the women of their society to have more. They're even paying money for them to have more children, because that's how devastating it can be, and that's how much of a threat this is to human population. This is more of a threat than this idea about the human beings destroying themselves or dropping a tremendous bomb on the world and all the human beings die. No, that's not the threat. The threat is that we can't replace ourselves if we're not giving birth that takes for us to continue on into life. These are facts that relate to everyone. Now, in terms of the African-American people, we have to realize that we are a unique group. And the group is unique in the sense that we've been here in this part of the world maybe 400 to 500 years. And some of Africans, people from Africa and the place we are originally from, at least our ancestry originally from, they came over before. Some came up by boat and walked up through South America. Some came over through the Bering Straits and walked down that way. They call those Native Americans, people who was in America before the European explorers came to America. But that's not true with the African-American people. We weren't here. Now, I know the argument is when they start talking about the race issue, when they start talking about the slavery issue, they say, well, we were here because Africans were here, but that's not us. We are different. And this difference is something we have to realize, or there's a good chance that this concept of the sub-replacement fertility birth rate will affect us generationally speaking. And you don't see the Incas here. There were Incas that are native of this country. They've been here many thousands of years, and they are in South America. And it was over 40 million of them when the European came. By the time the European got here, it was 40 million of the Inca people. Now they're down about 2 million, and they're still dwindling. Aztecs out in Mexico, there was 25 million of those. Now they're down to a little less than 2 million. And some of the people in Native Americans have become extinct already. They don't even exist anymore, like the Massachusetts Native American. That was the name of a group of what we call a tribe of people in America when they came. They are, pardon me for one moment. I'm going to have to see if our program is still on. Get back on now. Go ahead. And this is what we are dealing with now, because we see evidence. We see the evidence of people who lived before are not living today, generationally speaking, because they were not multiplying fast enough. This is not a humorous thing. This is not something we could just take lightly. It's a reality. It's a reality to keep a particular control. The creation, this whole creation, when the creator, when Allah created the creation, he created the creation so that the creation could continue growing, continue developing. And that includes the human being. That includes all the animals of the planet. Everything has this cycle that they go through, this life cycle. And they all have to answer to this law, to this law that causes the human being not to overplant it, to overgrow so much so that they become overgrown in the planet in terms of numbers. No, everything is a balance. But when that balance is off, that group disappears. Hundreds and thousands of species have disappeared. 99%, 97% of the species that were here are gone on this planet. This is a reality. This is a reality that the African American must consider. And we must consider it because there's no one here that's going to help the African American people to see this reality, let alone help them to combat this reality, because most of us don't even realize it exists. They have their scientists, the Chinese, the Japanese, the European, the Native, the European and the European American. They have their scientists on the case. They have already started to reverse their advertisement in America to the woman. They're no longer pushing the woman out of the house. They're now pushing the woman in the house and having with children in their advertisements. And if you notice in the commercials that you see on TV, on the internet and YouTube, you will see that the women are more in a home setting, more in a mother setting than they are in that independent setting. Woman with no children setting, woman being independent setting, they're not in that setting as much anymore. That setting was what America had become accustomed to over the years, but it has now caused them to fall below the sub-replacement fertility rate. They are trying to reverse the process, and they're not instructing the African-American people that they should have to try to reverse this process too.
Now, why does that? Why does it just work for them to just try to reverse the process with just the European American, and should work for the African American? It shouldn't be a major difference, but it is. And the difference is the African American people don't realize that they are an independent group of people. They don't realize that they are a separate species. They don't realize they are a separate race formed from the major race. The major race is the human race, and different races have been formed from that human race. You have the Watusis, you have the Chinese, you have the Japanese, you have the Angolans. You have all of these people who are different species of the human being. They're not the same. No one in their right mind would look at the Chinese person or group of people and compare them to the Watusis in Africa and say they're the same people. They could say they're all part of the human race. Yes. They're different variations of the human race. The human race is not just one color. The human race is just not one appearance. The human race is a variety. It's a variety of people. You go down several miles from where the Watusis are in Africa, and you will find the pygmies. Pygmies are people who grow 4 feet tall. 4 feet tall compared to Watusis, who are six, seven, some even 7 feet. And there's another tribe down a little further in Africa. The average is 6'8", 7 feet tall, taller than the Watusi. And there's millions of them. This is a reality. We have to look at the reality and not get hung up with this make-believe world that the European American has created in our mind. People are different. Look in your own family. You are different from your sister, different from your brother. Even twins are different. There's no harm in difference. And especially when those of us who study the Quran, who recognize that Allah says in the Quran, he created us from one soul, but he created us to multiply in different cultures. Different races, different cultures, different biological groupings. And he said he created that. And he says he could have created just one if he wanted to. All would have been the same if he wanted it that way. And the reason he gives as to why we are different, so we can get to know each other. Well, the better way of understanding that is to learn from each other and help produce with each other. Help become helpers in this development of the creation. Now, the African American came into existence a little different. Most cultures, when they are born, they either do it through migration or aggression. They are aggressive enough to move into a land and take the land over, and then they grow in that land, and the land becomes theirs. Or they migrate to a land that may be vacant and of human beings, and they then are sparse, and then they take over the land and they grow. That may be how they will come into existence. That's a normal process. And that's what when we look at history, history shows us that's basically what man has been doing. That's how we've been getting the different cultures. And then they take on the characteristics of the land in which they stay in for thousands of years. They take on that characteristic. They take on the food that's grown in the soil that is produced. They produce certain minerals and vitamins and things of that nature in that part of the world. And that causes the complexion, and that causes their hair texture, their eyes. And when you couple in the sun and the and the changing of the seasons, you find that the man that looked very similar 100 years ago or 200 years ago, those products that come off of that line begin to look different. And they don't have to even mix with another species. They can, the species within that area begin to change because of the land and the food they eat. The food they eat and the weather, the temperature, the climate, all causes them to change. And in the case of the African American, it happened quite differently. The African American was part of a commercial venture of the European colonial, we call them explorers, some call them explorers, but as those of you who have read some of my material, you know we called that group predators. Financial and political predators. They came into this country, we now call America, and they saw it was good for them. And they gathered up all they could to take back to Europe and prove to the people of Europe that they had come into a land, that they have the land of milk and honey, you can call it, the great area which they had dreamed of. And they had to farm this land, develop this land. And they had to use other human beings. They either had to use the Native American who was here, or they had to become part of a system that was already in existence. The slave system, slave trade was already in existence. They weren't coming to America, but they were going all over all other places in the world, different parts of Africa. Slavery is not a new thing. It's something we, as African Americans, must grab hold of and stop allowing people to manipulate our minds to make us think that slavery is a term. The term I'm going to use now, we encourage you not to use, is a black and white issue, a race issue. It's not a race issue. It never was a race issue. No matter how they tie it into this religious idea about the Christians and how they determine who was a Christian and who not, that's all make-believe. That's all folly. The reality is that the European needed laborers. They needed a labor system. And they already had one in place, which wasn't quite as good as having laborers who you didn't have to pay them. Free labor was better than, even if you pay the indentured servants some money and give them some advantage, it didn't beat free labor. And slave was that they figured out how to write contracts with each other, and if some would transport slaves from one part of the world to the other, then they could use those slaves, and the slave would be obligated to the slave master all of their lives in some of those contracts. Some of the contracts, they could work their way off, and most of the contracts in the early days of colonial America, most slaves can earn money off when they're off and use that money to buy their freedom. They could buy their freedom from their slave master. Many of them could. Many of them did. But the European and the African relationship was not one about race. The European and African relationship was one about economy, the economy, economics, dealing with making money, the kind of money they needed when they would get from cotton, tobacco, rice, gold and silver, all of those precious metals and everything they got out of, all they got out of the soil. They needed the labor of the slave to do that. They used the capital, human capital of the slave to help build their plantations. The plantations weren't built primarily by the colonies, or the colonial people. It was built primarily by the slaves they had. And the more slaves they could accumulate, the bigger their plantations and the stronger their system would be, and the more money they could make. That was the driving force. The driving force was not color. We got to get away from that thinking, because that thinking is what keeps us not being as productive as we can be. What we want to examine is, who are we? That's what we want to examine. We want to examine that very closely. We want to look at that and say, who are we? And how do we come about? And what in our nature that has been used by others that we can turn around and use for ourselves? This is where we have to start looking at our position in America. This is what we have to start considering in terms of who we are, and understand the importance of it. If we first got to step away from this this idea of slavery being a racial thing. Races, the different races was enslaving each other long before they were being enslaved by a non-racial person within their group. The Chinese enslaved Chinese, many still do today. Africans enslaved Africans. Europeans enslaved Europeans before they ever even enslaved the African, even to bring to their land or to bring to America. It's not a new thing. It's not a new thing. It's part of what the old world used to build up the economy. That's what it is. It's part of the labor force that they use to build up their economy. And some countries, like Great Britain and maybe some of the others, they actually saw slavery as an injustice to humanity. They wanted to, they did, outlaw slavery. In fact, they were one of the first countries, whether it be Africa or whether it be China, whether it be Saudi Arabia, whether it be Arabia, whether it be the Far East, the British were one of the first to outlaw slavery and the slave trade. One of the first. So it's not about color. We got to get past the color thinking in order to start thinking about how we can save who we are. Once we know who we are, we can save who we are. If we don't know who we are, we continue to disappear. Getting past issue of color. Getting to the issue of ourselves and the preservation of ourselves. Getting to that issue is what's important. That's the most important. We hear some of the great speakers and lectures like Omar Johnson and Thomas Sowell and people of that nature. But everybody seemed to step past and or just maybe purposely not look at the idea that the African American is a different species. When you start talking about African American as a different species, then they run back into their closet that says, oh, everybody's the same, all human beings are the same, when they know that's a lie. That is a lie that we shouldn't even let anyone tell us that. When they start telling us that all people, all human beings are the same thing, we should tell them we don't want to hear stupidness. All human beings are different. And they have to learn to use that different for the benefit. You are different from your cousin, your sister, your brother, your mother, your father. We are different. But that difference should not be a detriment. That difference should be a beauty. That difference should be the reason we make progress. But we let them When I say them, I mean the European American who have the predatorial nature to bleed from the people, the life of the people, just for wealth that they gain. But we are the ones that have to do this. We are the ones that have to come in contact with the reality in which we are living and do something about it. Who are we? It's where we are right now, discussion today. And we will open up the lines. We are starting to get people back now from, because we had a serious technological problem. We're starting to get people back. So we will open up the floor for questions and comments and that you will have. And we're going to have a time to talk about that. And we have a couple other issues that we had to deal with. Now they're being solved. And as we solve them, we will continue on with the program. But we're going to open up the program in a few minutes about and give you a chance to comment on what we're talking about, because what we're talking about today is very important that we grasp it. We grasp it at least, and then we can go into how what we can do about it. Who are we? It's very important. I remember back in the 1960s, 68, 60, my time, but I was reminded in my time about a time before that came in the 30s, 1930s, and in 29, and that area. And after I got into my own studies, independent studies, I began to learn of times even before that, where the African-American people were still struggling with the concept and of who they are and what they had to do to become achievers. And many of them were very successful, even in that situation, dealing in the 1920s and 1930s. But around the 1930s, there was a concept that came right after Drew Ali. Those of you who might know the history of Drew Ali, he was an African-American young brother who was an African-American who went and took some studies and learned and was taught and about Islam. As he knew, he was taught by some – he was actually taught by some rabbis. Because during that time, rabbis were just teachers, and many of them knew about the Quran because the Quran was the newest form of revelation to religious people who believed in the Torah and other religious doctrines and the Bible and other religious concepts. They saw the Quran as a book of wisdom, as a book of knowledge that came after the Torah about 4,000 years after, really, and after the Bible, the Quran was revered by the people of that time. And so when you hear, if you study and do some research, you're going to hear and read that there were rabbis who taught Islam, who taught the Quran. In fact, one of the writers of the one who penned the Declaration of Independence was Thomas Jefferson, and that was one of his main books that he had read. He went out and bought it was in two volumes at that time. He went out and bought a two-volume of the Holy Quran. It was in English, and he read it. And those of you who read Quran for yourself, and then you read what Thomas Jefferson wrote. Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence. You will see the similarity in terms of the humanity that he talks about in the Declaration of Independence. And you will see that mirror much of what is in the Quran and other books too, but you could see it very clear on what he was looking at in a contemporary sense. And that kind of thinking came to our modern day time also. That kind of thinking came to our modern day time when Farad Muhammad began to teach the Honorable Elijah Muhammad a concept that he developed that he thought would help the African-American people to get out of what they were in terms of this mentality of the European-American that had the African-American people in a state of mental slavery. Even though the African-American was free walking around, he still was indebted to the European-American because of the way we've been educated. Like we hear here on the program, we say mental freedom. But mental freedom comes at a cost. You have to begin to reject. You have to reject something that's holding you back from becoming mental freedom. You know, as a Muslim, the one thing you have to do is to free your mind to even accept Islam. For a person to accept Islam, he has to begin with la. No, he has to begin with the term la in order to begin his process of rejecting that which he was taught and what he saw before and try to incorporate in his existence that which he sees in front of him now, and which would be education or understanding of Quran or someone telling him about the book and things of that nature. Now, that's what that la is for. To get mental freedom, you have to start with la. You don't start with mental freedom with yes. Once you agree with whatever's put before you, you have given up your freedom. You have given up your freedom to whatever's in front of you, to whatever's been presented to you, whatever has laid you down. You are not free of yourself. You are submitting to that. The first thing the human being must do when he's talking about something as close to ourselves as Islam and mental freedom, we must first break away from that which holds us mentally. And that's why you have to say that. You have to say, there is no God. And you say, there is no God. And after your studies, you say, but the one Ibrahim was talking about that you can't see, you can't hear, you can't touch, that he's, you have to believe in this God, this creator of the universe. It has to be your belief. You can't touch him. You have to go into your mind and do all the thinking and research you can and come away with the rational point of view that takes you to belief. Then the mind is free, because then the material things are not holding you. Material things that people use to hold the mind are not holding you. See, so this is where the African-American was coming into this knowledge when Farad Muhammad was teaching the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and giving him the knowledge of how to develop self. Because that's what they was talking about, the development of self. The development of self, how they come into the knowledge of self and the degree of self. And the way he was able to do that is to get the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to begin to reject that which had him enslaved in the mind. That he had to reject the concept of the European American being over him and dominate him. And in order to be able to start to accept himself. And if those of you who remember, you remember it was about self, do for self, know self, trying to get the African to start thinking for self. And many Africans began during that time to do that. Even during the time of Ju Ali, when we mentioned that earlier, they were able to do that. Accepting the self, rejecting that which holds self to get self to be free. Free mental freedom is what it's all about. In fact, that's all the Creator asks. Those of you who read the Bible and the Quran and the Torah, in there, it's all about freedom of thought. The Bible and the Quran and the Torah is not books to imprison your mind, but they're books to free your mind. I know that someone said, well, what about it makes you say we have to do this and we have to do that? if you look at any of the things that come out of those books, they all are designed to encourage by maybe ritualistic behavior to free the mind. They may take a generation or so, but they really encourage that. And the leaders who discourage that, they use their strength and their will to cut off the people from freedom of mind, freedom of thinking. They don't want the people to be free. Why? Because they think if the people will be free, they can't control them any longer. And the reason they feel that, because they themselves are weak. Only a weak leader would think if their minds were free, they wouldn't follow him anymore. He's a weak leader, or she's a weak leader. People who have courage, leaders who have courage, they could tell the people the truth about everything that's going on, especially in this world. Now that we in this situation is going over in the Middle East, they would tell the world the truth and accept the people's strength to believe in truth and follow them. But the truth is what must happen, but the truth is not what the leadership wants. The leadership wants ways and mechanisms on how to manipulate the mind of the people to keep the people serving them. Serving them so they can make money off the people, so they can do what they do in politics and become the leaders of the people. Keep the people ignorant. And as we were saying, how that freedom of mind began with the Nation of Islam, as far as the African-American people, just we was into that process, but it began in modern-day times at that particular time when Farah Muhammad taught the Honorable Elijah Muhammad on how to look at the European as a detriment to him and not a benefit. And they reversed the concept. They reversed the idea that the European American was not God, the European American was the devil. So that's the reverse concept. So you see how that works, how to free the mind? The freeing of the mind, sometimes is very, very, very harsh. Sometimes the freeing of the mind is a very, very, very painful. It can be a painful experience. But it's necessary in order for the human being to reach their potential that Allah has put in the human being for each of us. Each of us has to reach our potential if we are to live this complete life that Allah has for us. Freedom, and it's not just in Islam now, and I don't want to give that impression. Freedom of the mind is in all of the books. Free thinking is all of the books. It's only the leaders who tell you don't think free. Only the leaders who want to keep you enslaved to them, they don't want you to think free because you may not follow them anymore. You may have the confidence that your God has created you with the ability to follow him without them. So in order to reach our potential, we have to consider freeing of the mind. So with that, we want to take a minute here and do one promo. Then we want to ask those of you who have questions, jot them down. We're going to come back after this announcement. We'll come back. You ask your questions or make your comments, and we can move on to the next issue in terms of what we are trying to develop here today. I want to apologize again for our untimely situation that caused a technical breakdown in our program.
Oh. Assalamu alaikum. This is Nirmat Shaheed, restorative justice practitioner for the Oakland Unified School District and host on AM360's The Pearls of Women Quranic Mondays. We're asking you to help us make a difference in the life of a student. We need you to spread the word that CWSC is offering 5 college scholarships in the form of direct financial aid to students who qualify and are graduating from high school this year or current college students. Learn more and apply online today at cwsc.us. But hurry, the deadline for applications is June the 20th. Thank you for helping secure our next generation's intelligentsia. Assalamu alaikum.
Because there is no God but the one God. My
God. Yes, now we want to open up the floor for questions. And we're going to try to get to everyone. If you want to ask a question or make a comment, we're going to give you the time to do that. So all you have to do is push the one on your phone, and we could bring you into the queue, and you can make your statement or comment. And those of you who want to ask a question that I had asked before to push the one on your phone, you can go out and come back in and push the one on your phone again, and I would know you do want to ask a question. I can't tell whether you want to ask a question or not because your hand has been up all the time. So now, those of you who are here, I don't see any hands, so that's gives us the opportunity to continue on with the thought that we have been working on this evening to help us come to a understanding about what we are about. And the point we want to drive home tonight, we know there's just so much we could talk about, but the point we want to drive home tonight is who we are. And we have to have a strong commitment in that and a strong understanding in that who we are. I'm not just talking about the person we see in the mirror. Now, we all can do that. And we never still don't know who we are when we do that. But the point is, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about how we were made. Now, those of you who have been students of Imam Wahdi Muhammad, and are quite naturally, you probably are expected to have this question already in hand because he said clearly that we are a new people. He didn't say we are a people who came from another people, and that other people is who we are. He didn't say that. He said that we are a new people, and as a new people, we have a new voice. We have a new our opinion is different. Our views are different. And then when those of us who did some research realized why he was saying all of that, began to understand what he was talking about. He was telling us that every people has a culture, and the culture defines the people because the culture is what shapes them from childhood to adulthood, and that shaping is enough to help them move into the world and develop their own character and their own potential. It's when that's interrupted is where the problem exists. When that process is interrupted, where the culture itself is no longer capable of bringing the people into the knowledge of themselves and the knowledge on how they can best serve themselves. When that happens, then they are manipulated by outside cultures. The European American, they're struggling today to keep cultural education out of the schools. Now, common sense would tell us that if they're keeping cultural education out of schools, that means they don't want to help the African American, period. That shouldn't be no hard question for anybody, hard understanding. If they were looking to help a people
They would try to benefit the people. And the thing that would benefit the African-American people most is the knowledge of themselves. Most of us don't even have an idea we have a language. And most, especially in my generation, they have heard their parents and grandparents speak the language. All people in the neighborhood, and I'm not talking about just in the South, but all over. They picked up a whole language out in California, and they call it Ebonics, that the kids, they say, were speaking it on the streets. And some educators got together and put together and said, this is Ebonics. Where did they get the sounds from? Where did they get the sounds from that they were making on the street? Those sounds they were making and calling it language was coming from their grandparents. Long before California had even been in existence, before the African was in California, before the European American went to California, they were speaking, their parents and their forefathers were speaking in the 1600s, they were speaking the language called Geechee. And they teach this language now in Harvard University as the African-American language. But they don't tell and publicize that. They tell their people that and give their people a education on language on how they can best use it to manipulate the African people, African-American people. We have to begin to learn what our culture is about and embrace it. We are not called black people. Our foreparents didn't call us black people. Negroes, niggers, that's not our language. There's no place, no planet called Negro. No place on this planet called Negro. People are determined by their place of origin, what place they originate from. Black, where is black? There's no country called black. In fact, there's no country called African or Africa. Even if we use Akibalan, it's still no place. It's a continent. Africa is a continent. It's closer to identity than black, because there is no continent called black. There is no land called black, no dirt called black. But at least Africa is a continent that most people say that is over across the countries within it. Africa is not a country, but it's a continent. So when our foreparents got their freedom, won their freedom in America, they won it from Great Britain. They fought in the Revolutionary War alongside of the Patriots, the colonists that was called Patriots. They were the one against the King of England. They fought against the King of England and the Loyalists. There was all another group of colonists who was with the King. And our foreparents threw their weight behind the Patriots. And that's what changed the war. That was what caused the war to come into favor, Patriots. Now, those Patriots who celebrate this act and don't include the African-American in that act are scoundrels. They're scoundrels. They're scoundrels who would tell a lie in front of your face. And that's what they should be looked at, and that's why we should reflect to them. They are scoundrels. But depriving our generation and depriving our foreparents of the dignity that came from fighting for the freedom of America. And in 1783, one of the Africans, they were still called Africans then, and they chose that name for themselves. But although we know where the name, where the word come from, it comes from a couple places, one part Greece, part of two brothers who was from Europe. We understand that. But our foreparents in 1783, we know for a fact one of them, as he was giving a sermon, so he must have been either a preacher or something of that nature, a large group of Africans. And he said to them, he said, we are of the same complexion, and we all are of African descent. We are all of descendants from Africa. And we should throw our weight behind the patriots in this war. And they did. And he wrote that. It was called the Sermon of General Cornwallis. And he wrote it and signed it African American. That's the first time we saw that term used in public in the history of America. Why don't they teach that in the schools of the young African-American students so they know who they are and why their parents chose that name for them, to dignify them, to say we won our freedom from the European oppressor, as far as we're concerned, at this day and time. But it wasn't as bad as some of the European-Americans make it sound. The colonists were more interested in a free enterprise here in America for themselves. And they won that freedom to do so. That's one of the things we need to know. That's who we are. We need to stand by these things and ask people to show proof of what they're talking about. Show proof that we are some black diasporists. They don't want us to have the independent pride of having dignity of belonging to a unique people, like all the other people are unique from their generation or their people, the Chinese, the whoever it is. But they don't want us to have that. We don't have to force anybody to give it to us because our parents already did it. Our grandparents already established it. It's just for us to embrace it. We must embrace it. And as to our biological heritage in America, we are made of the Africans from the western coast of Africa, the different tribes, not all of them, but many of them, came to this country or brought to this country. Some came, but brought to this country, the majority, and to South America. Of 100% of all the Africans who was brought to North America, I mean South, this part of America, the Western Hemisphere, 90% of them went to South America. Only 5% came to North America, the place we know as America, the United States of America now. Only 5% of them. But that 5% came to mix with each other. Like the other parts were more. They begin to mix with each other, marry amongst themselves. Then they begin to mix with the European that was here. They even took part of the language they created, the Geechee language they created. They used the European's language as the foundation for that language. And then they added Arabic. They added the different dialects from the different African tribes. And they came up with this language, Geechee. And they named it after the river that was in Georgia, that ran from the south, north to south of Georgia into the Sea Islands, and they call it the Ogeechee River. And they call themselves the Gullah Geechee. Gullah, as you know, most of you who studied Quran, Gullah is how they hid the term of their God. And most of the Africans, and just like today, if you say Allah to Christians or Jews, they're going to know you're talking about God. You say Allah to anybody, they're going to know you're talking about God. So God, Allah is sort of synonymous to God in any language. So when they decided to say Gullah, using the Arabic language, to define themselves as a religious people, as a people who believed in dignity and believed in the Creator, they just use the word to conceal what they were trying to tell to their people. Gullah Geechee created this language the same as the European created the language Yiddish. And when the Jews was in Germany, they created the language Yiddish. Look it up. Look it up. It's in the books, YouTube. That's where Yiddish come from. The two predominant indigenous languages of the people who call themselves Jews, Yiddish and Hebrew. And then all the other languages they got from the different countries. Our foreparents had the same intelligence. They want to make us think we're intelligent enough to invent a language. They only the only ones who can invent a language. This is what they're telling us when they say, "Oh, that's not a language. That's Pig Latin. That's some kind of Geechee. That's some kind of language that the Greeks came up with, or some kind of language that the Spanish came up with, or some kind of language that the French came up with, like Creole. That kind of they give it all kinds of names, but they don't." Tell us out to our face that that's a language created by your forefathers. And the reason they don't do that is because you start developing pride in your language and who you are. And if you decide to developing that pride in who you are, that means you become more productive. You get more confidence in yourself. And that it was Allah who created you and allowed the situation to happen in America for this slave system they developed here to be reversed, to make the African-American people a special people, being able to overcome the obstacles put in front of them and to build a new and better idea of a society. Now, not only the African was part of the mixing of the different races and population, the African also was breeded. Now they don't like to get into this debate too much because then we will see exactly what we are. We were breeded. When the slave trade was stopped by Britain around 1865, when it was stopped, the European American had to begin to breed slaves. They would mate the strongest with the one they thought was most productive with the other one. They didn't care if they were offsprings of another parent that they were mating them with. They just mated them. But what that did, that caused a genetic change. And the Africans who was brought to North America here in the United States than in other parts of the world. You can't find this genetic makeup that the African-American people are made of nowhere else in the world but here. Nowhere else. You may find one or two of us who live in those different places, but you won't find the collective 40 million African-Americans here. You can't find that kind of grouping anywhere of these people. This is why Imam Muhammad said we are new people. It is us who have to believe that. The European believes it. They know it. And it's certainly God knows that because he allowed this to happen so he can create a better people. He can take the bottom rung and bring it to the top. That's the power. We are the ones that have to believe this. We're the ones who don't believe it. Anytime you say something to an African American about being a new people and talk about a reality, we have an identity of our own. No. What about white people? What about them? I'm going to tell you about white people. We ain't got but a few more minutes here because we got another program coming on and another program coming on, courtship and marriage, going to be on at about 7 o'clock. And I want you to stay and wait for that program. It'll be a beautiful program. But let me tell you a little bit about this concept of white people. You should never, ever use that term ever again, identifying a human being. Because that scheme that they put in place America, in continental America, colonial America, around 1676 was to a concept of called divide and conquer. They were trying to divide the working class because several years before that, one of them by the name of Bacon, Nathaniel Bacon, he united the Africans, the Native Americans, and the European workers together and overthrew colonial rule because they felt as though the colonial rule was not giving them what they thought they deserved. That unity frightened them. Them meaning Britain, the English, that someone could unite all those people against them and win. They burned down Jamestown. So Bacon died within a year. But the skirmishes continued on. By the time Britain got their soldiers over here and to try to get everything straightened out, Bacon had passed. But the rulers, the governors over here, who were still governing after the English put them back in power, they asked to change some rules and regulations in order to create a condition of divide and conquer. This is in your history books. They said they wanted to call the European colonists. It's the first time ever was designated as a people. And we want to give them special privileges. All of them who are called white people can carry weapons. They can vote. They can marry who they want. And they was discouraged to marry an African woman. They didn't like that, but some of them did. But the American woman was penalized if she married the African slave. She had to accept to become a slave to the slave master of the man that she married. And all their children had to become slaves. That's what they put on that word white. They nailed it into the laws of the time. They wrote it into what they call colonial law. The black codes. Their concept was to divide and conquer. It was to break the working class. But in doing that, they instilled this idea of white supremacy, not just European supremacy. White supremacy. You have to put the word white with it. When you put the word white with it, it means now you get the privileges. So it's white supremacy is what they created. And every time you call a European American a white person, psychologically, you give up your freedom. You give up your mental freedom. You're submitting to a word which tells you that they're superior over you and get special privileges over you. And they think the same way when they call themselves white. You don't hear them saying they're people of color. Yet you, the Africans, Americans, stand up there on stages right next to European Americans say, well, we people of color, and they point to the European Americans, and they can help us. They made laws that the African could not carry weapons, could not marry who he wants. They made laws in colonial time. This didn't come with the color of the skin. This came with a scheme to divide the masses of the people so they can control them. The way you control people is keep them divided. You don't let them unite into one idea, one concept. You don't have to give them the freedom to be themselves. You break them up pieces. And it's harder to put something together if it's all in pieces. What vase do you know looks pretty if it's all broke up into pieces? What do you know, a piece of clothes or anything that's torn up into pieces that look better? Even the quilts, they call it quilting. They have to sew them back together, the pieces back together, before they can look at them and say this is a quilt. It's very important for us to be able to understand who we are. Who we are and what we can do. Now, we don't have the time to continue what we had started with in terms of the sub-replacement fertility rate. But you can see. You can see with your own rational thinking. Follow the logic. If we are a people, a unique people, that means we have to come under the same laws that everyone else comes under in this creation. That the sub-replacement fertility rate pertains to us also. Because we cannot be replaced. We can't go to Africa and get an African-American. We can't go to Nigeria and say, give me all your African-Americans, let them come here and we mix with them. We can't do that. The Irish can do that. The Polish can do that. And the Africans who are here, who came here in this time, can do that. They can go get more Africans and bring them here and the Nigerians to live here. But we can't do that. We have to use our own intellect to be able to survive in this day and time. We have to look at the reality of the numbers, and we have to begin to encourage our young people to marry amongst themselves. And we have to show them that the institution of marriage leads to the productivity of the race, of the people. And then let them know that every time they puff on a cigarette, they are lessening the possibility of the generation multiplying. Every time they take drugs, they're lessening that possibility. Every time they switch what they call, they don't know whether they're a man or a woman. A woman doesn't know whether she's a male or female. Every time they play that game of homosexuality, they stop being productive. They stop being productive in terms of a biological sense. And it's about the biology right now. It's not about I believe this and I believe that. It's far beyond that stage. I have a right to live like this and I have a right to live like that. It's far beyond that kind of thing now. It's the biological laws that Allah has put in place that's in charge. And if we do not comprehend that and be able to use our intellect, come this dilemma that our people are in, we will be gone in several generations. They'll be looking at us in museums. That's why they build museums for African Americans, and that's an insult. We should look at that as a big insult. We should say, what are you doing building a museum and we're still alive? Museums are for dead people. Museums are for dead civilizations. Museums are walking cemeteries. And you building African-American museum? They're insulting us in front of our face because they don't believe we can survive this. They don't believe we can come from one generation to the next and be successful enough that our people, the same people that are here, could be the same people down the line 100 years from now or 200 years from now. They don't believe we have that power. But you should believe it. You should believe that God did not make a mistake when he allowed the European American to use the slave trade to bring the African American here and the African American to be coming to a new people. God didn't make any mistake. He has taken the work of another people and turned it upside down to make a better people. And we should believe that. We should start understanding that. We should come into that understanding of who we are. Not to say we are talking about superiority. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the accomplishment to achieve against all odds the status of coming to the top of the class. Everything we enter, whether it be sports, science, doesn't make any difference. There's something about that genetic change that took place in America with the African American people, they don't like to talk about. They don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about Henrietta Lacks having this germ or this cell that's unique, because it might also open the door to make us think and understand that all African Americans may be unique. It's a very important thing for us to realize who we are. We have to embrace this, because we can argue about many things. One of the things that we don't have to take into consideration as much, we don't have to argue about religion. Religion is going to be with man, whoever the people are. Religion is going to survive. Religion is going to survive all catastrophes. Whatever people are existing, they're going to have a religion. They're going to believe in God. They're going to believe in the Creator some kind of way, and they will come back to the logical ways that we ourselves are part of. So religion is not going anywhere. And those of us who are Muslim, we believe that about Islam. It doesn't have to have a color, or it doesn't have to have a place of origin. We don't need a place for religion. Religion is a behavior, an emotional response to your environment based on your intellect and your ability to think logically. It's a response to cause a behavior. It's not a land. Religion, Al-Islam is not a lamb, a land. The Muslims in Arabia are not Islam. They practice in Islam. The same as the Muslims here in America. We practice in Islam. There's no difference. Religion's going to be here. What we are talking about, and what the leaders that came before us were talking about, who were concerned about the African-American people, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Imam Muhammad, and Drew Ali, and those long down the line, they were concerned about the salvation of the African-American people. They were concerned about their people. How would they survive the great calamities that would come in the times that we are in now? That's what they were concerned about. I know many of us think it was religion, but it wasn't. It was about salvation of the people. And if you read any of the religious books, what did the religion come to do? It came to save the people. Noah's time, what did it say? It came to save the people. It said, if you believe this, it will save your life. And when Noah and his people did, it saved their life. Noah, Musa, Moses, when he said, tell them to do what I say do. It will save your life. Moses put his rod in the water, and the water opened up. They walked through, and Pharaoh and his army came in and drowned it, because it's about saving the people. We have to get our focus properly. And I pray a lot. I wasn't too excited. Sometimes you get to the point where you really start to become part of what you're saying. But I don't want you to miss the importance of what I was saying, because that's so important that we do begin to understand that we are a people. And there's a process we're going to have to go through in order to save ourselves. And we are starting now to move in a way. We are down in South Carolina. We're planning on developing a cultural center. A cultural center, something for the living, not for the dead. Don't misunderstand that. We're not talking about a museum. They already did that. They did it in Washington. They did it that place. They're doing it all over America. Because they think we're dead, but we're not. We are talking about a culture center, a place where the young people could come and learn about themselves, learn how to develop their human capital, learn about the things that brought our people into existence, learn about the things they have to do today and tomorrow in order to prosper. That's what we are talking about. We'll talk about developing one right there in Charleston, South Carolina, the place where most of the slaves came in. 70% of all the slaves that came into America came through Charleston, South Carolina. That was the door that came in, and we're going to close that door with the cultural center, not a multicultural center. We're going to do a cultural center. It's, the name of the center is named after the African-American people who have done something. And that's what we are establishing. And those of you who understand where we're talking about, and even if you don't understand, if you want to help develop the African-American culture to the point where we can save ourselves, just remember that God helped those who helped themselves. That's not just a, you know. But we're here every Tuesday. Every Tuesday we're here between the time 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, and we had a guest to do today, but we had so much technical difficulty. He will be back next week, and we're going to go over and give you a chance to deal with that. And remember, in a few minutes coming on now, we have courtship and marriage program coming on. So stay tuned for that. It's a very, very dynamic program, very good. And we are here again. Use the same number to call in. And those of you who want to reach me personally, you can use my cell, which is 908-296-2558, or you can go to my website, which is Building New Africa USA.com/. And you can get more discussion. We also have blogs that we can send to you. These are all free of charge and everything. No, we're not talking about finance. We're talking about knowledge right now. And you'll be able to develop that. So I want to thank you all very much. And as I begin to close out our program evening, I want to remind you again that it's about self. It's about the knowledge of self. Don't be afraid of that. Don't be afraid of stretching out to learn more about yourself, more about the self that's right here created. Don't think we have to be part of somebody else. That's just another fib, as they say to young children, that they are lying to us. And if they was concerned about us, we wouldn't have the problems we have right now. And we're not begging them for anything. Just stay out of the way. That's all we ask. We are citizens of America. We have equal protection under the law. Just stay out of our way and help those who help you and be kind to your neighbors and so forth and so on. It's about them. So, but in that, I want to say, A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I greet you in the greetings of peace. Assalamu alaikum. And may God bless you all. And we'll see you next week at the same time with a guest to take you further into what we're talking about. And tell your friends and relatives and brothers and sisters to tune in every week. Greet you in peace. Assalamu alaikum.